Phil Valentine Show on the Westwood One Radio Network. Well, Ryan Young, with the Competitive Enterprise Institute's trade policy expert, says the new NAFTA is a lot like the old NAFTA. There's not a whole lot of changes in it, so we thought we would bring him in to chat about that. Ryan, how are
you? Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. So the president says he doesn't like NAFTA, doesn't want to call it NAFTA, so we're calling it something else now. It sounds like a branch of the military, but the USMCA, you're saying it's not really that different from NAFTA.
No, with NAFTA, the most important thing about it is a near absence of tariffs. Basically, the original NAFTA agreement back in the 90s virtually eliminated all tariffs. There are a few exceptions, such as Canada's dairy industry, for example. There are some automobile regulations as well that serve as de facto trade barriers. And the renegotiated U.S. Marine Corps, United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, actually liberalizes those, so that it does a good thing in that respect. But otherwise, it's really not much of a change at all. It just has a new name and a few other minor changes.
Well, now how about the dairy thing? I mean, that was the big bugaboo, 300% on or almost on dairy products coming from the U.S. into Canada. Has that changed?
It has changed. That's a policy that Canada should have liberalized a long time ago, and now because of these negotiations, they are going to do so. Unfortunately, the U.S. Also has quite a bit of protectionist policies and its own agriculture policies, not just in the dairy industry, but across the board, ranging from subsidies to export policies to you name it. Of course, a lot of those are state level, so they're not necessarily covered in a federal level agreement like the USMCA. But that's something the U.S. should have done and didn't. So there's no change there.
Okay. Well, where is the change? I mean, what are we getting for this?
Not much. The big one for consumers is going to be that cars are going to become a little bit more expensive. For cars that are manufactured in Mexico, a certain percentage of workers have to make at least $16 per hour, which is several times higher than what the average Mexican laborer makes. So car companies have a choice between paying more to make in Mexico or more to move those jobs to the, which means disrupting supply chains, capital costs, real estate costs. So whether they stay in Mexico or move to the U.S., cars are going to cost a little bit more. And if they stay in Mexico, there's also, so if you're buying a $20,000 car, not a better car or a fancier car, but the same car, just more expensive.
But the workers are going to be paying at least $16 an hour, at least 40% of this, right?
Yeah, but out of consumers' pockets, so it's not a net gain. It's a redistribution.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying. I think what he was trying to do, people were saying, well, they're trying to get up the wages in the United States. I don't know many car manufacturers that aren't for folks to manufacture cars. I think this was designed to keep so many of the car manufacturers from going to Mexico.
Yeah, which is a shame, because the average manufacturing wage in the U.S. is already about $17.50. But if you preserve the manufacturing jobs, that prevents workers from moving to jobs in the service sector where pay is actually about a dollar higher on average. So if we're full talking about $2,000 a year, and you're talking about possibly as much as $4,000.
When you say that prevents jobs.
Essentially a lack of, it prevents basically needed economic progress from happening.
Okay. Well, how much are we talking about your average car is going to cost more?
It could be as much as $500. It all depends on how the industry reacts.
$500 on like a $20,000 or $25,000 car?
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to prevent anybody from buying a car.
Well, it's still $500 that could have gone to other things as well. So instead of having a car plus clothes for the kids or something for the kids' college account, date nights for the parents, you name it. Instead, they can have only the car, not those other things as well.
Well, okay, let me do some math here. I'm dividing this by about 48, which is driving. That's $10 a month extra they're going to pay. That's not a whole lot of money. Are we nitpicking on this, or do you not see your nitpicking?
The economic impact of the new NAFTA is pretty small, which is, in a way, it's a good thing. The main takeaway from this is that basically, the economy dodged a bullet. This could have been much worse.
When you say much worse, what were they wanting that they didn't get?
Well, for example, we've imposed 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum. Those will have multiples of the impact that that the NAFTA renegotiations have had. And suppose that similar policies had been extended to great swaths of U.S., Mexico, Canada trade, which totals more than $1.1 trillion per year. That could cause serious economic harm.
Well, are the steel and aluminum tariffs still in place for Mexico and Canada, or do they go away now?
No, they're staying in place, which is, I think, a missed opportunity. So that's something that should have happened but did not.
Okay, so we still got the steel tariffs on. How much steel? Do we get a lot of steel from Canada and Mexico?
That's a few hundred million dollars per year, so not nothing, but it's also not a huge portion of the industry.
Okay. But you folks at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, you're pretty satisfied with this because of what it didn't do, right?
Yeah, mainly we dodged a bullet, and that's why we're happy. It's not that it did a whole lot of good, although there are a few nits we can pick that are good. But yes, that's accurate.
All right. So if you had your way, though, I mean, would it be a different deal, or would you have just stayed with NAFTA?
I would wait until the political climate's a little different, and then there are things I would change about NAFTA in that it has a lot of trade-unrelated provisions in it. This is a trade agreement, but it still has environmental regulations, labor regulations, intellectual property regulations that don't have anything to do with trade. That doesn't mean they're not important issues. They just shouldn't be in a trade agreement. We should treat separate issues separately.
So we still got this global warming stuff still in this deal?
Very much so. In fact, that might have helped it pass.
And like, what all do we have as far as the green stuff that's in here?
Mostly it involves subsidies to green interests or quotas for a certain amount of products. If you want to be exempt from a tariff or some other quota, you have to satisfy some green requirement or other. It's a 1,812-page agreement, so I can't quote the details off the top of my head. But
well, why can't we get rid of that? That's like bovine scatology. Why don't we get rid of that stuff? I mean, we don't need to be. I mean, you know, if the market wants to decide that they want to put solar panels or windmills or whatever up, I don't have any problem with that. But to incentivize people to do this kind of stuff seems foolish to me.
I completely agree, and I wish more negotiators thought like you and I did on this issue.
Well, they don't, do they? Any chance that that's going to be taken care of in another agreement somewhere? And maybe in just the United States and the way we deal with this kind of thing?
Not for the next decade or two. This was the first renegotiation of NAFTA in about 25 years. And one of the costs of doing it now instead of, say, during the next administration, 2 to 6 years from now, is that window is now closed for a very long time. So we can't really revisit this in a very long time.
How about this? The Congress, to me, I mean, we get off on how much they're spending, too. I mean, the deficits keep going up. They keep saying, well, we're doing this for the military, and then they won't do what they need to do as far as cutting spending because of this stupid filibuster rule in the Senate. What's your thought on that? I mean, we need to get rid of that thing, don't we?
We do, but again, good luck with it happening. Maybe election results will change that, depending if there's a party change and what kind of political dynamics that inspires, but we'll see what happens.
Well, you think if the Democrats got in, we would be better off, or what?
Well, on trade issues, it's hard to say, because the president's instincts are good on some issues, but not so much on trade. And if the Democrats' primary impulse is to block him from getting political victories, that could spare the economy some harm. It wouldn't do it any good, per se, but it would prevent harm.
Okay. So, but overall, you're happy with the deal, I'm gathering.
Yeah, there are things I would like to improve, but given political realities, I think this might have been about as good as we can do. It's not perfect, but it's okay for now.
All right. Trade policy expert Ryan Young from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Their website is CEI.org, correct?
Correct. Thank
you. All right. And we got a link to it at PhilValentine.com under show prep. Ryan is our expert of the day. You'll find it at PhilValentine.com under show prep, the expert of the day today. Ryan, appreciate it very much.
Hey, thank you.